Hey, Zero Block 30 listeners, you can find us every Tuesday and Friday on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and YouTube. Prime members can also listen ad-free on Amazon Music.
For us, golf is simple. It's a chance to get out and have some fun with our friends. But inevitably, little things have a way of ruining it. The group ahead is taking forever, you can't find the fairway with a map, and the bev cart is nowhere to be found. And the best way to make a bad day better is Fireball Whiskey. You get their nips, the little shooters. They are great. Makes bad day way, way, way better. Make sure to grab the new Fireball Birdie Shot Club. It's literally a golf club filled with Fireball nips. Put it in your bag. It'll fit right in that side pocket. Drink Fireball nips and have a great time on the golf course.
Today's episode of Zero Block 30 is brought to you by our good friends at Starbucks. They've hired 21,000 military veterans and their spouses. We released a video series with them called Zero Block 30. Make sure that you check that out. Go on Twitter, search the hashtag. It's also pinned to the top of the Zero Block 30 Twitter account, Instagram account, all that shit. You can find it pretty easily. They have hired, again, 21,000, and they've opened 50 military stores. And while they've met various veterans and military spouses who have been hired by Starbucks along this way, everybody seems to like it. It's weird to find a company that everybody who works there really likes it. And I like how they also call their employees partners. Today, they've announced that since 5 years they've been doing this, they've hired 21,000 people, more than double the original commitment. And they want to hire even more to apply and take advantage of all the dope benefits that Starbucks has, including tuition for an Arizona State online college degree. Visit starbucks.com/veterans. That's starbucks.com/veterans. You probably want a job there too. Let's start the show. Prisoners who are catfishing soldiers, and the amount of money came out of how much money that they're doing. To give a brief overview, so these prisoners that were in South Carolina got a hold of cell phones, and they were doing all different types of internet searches and made these soldiers believe that they were going to blackmail them. And so the soldiers were PayPaling different accounts, getting the money back inside prison. And the amount of money that they actually got from this scheme is pretty fucking phenomenal.
I mean, yeah, it's impressive.
Yeah. It really is. So 5 inmates in the Carolinas extorted more than $500,000 from military personnel throughout the country using illegal cell phones to pose as women on dating sites. The prisoners have now been indicted on federal charges, including extortions and wire fraud. But you and I, all of us know how much young troops get paid.
Mm-hmm. Not much.
There was a ton of soldiers getting extorted if it was
$500,000. $560,000. Yeah, that's a ton.
There had to have been, what do you think? I mean, off the top of my head, I would say probably 200 or 300.
I was going to say, yeah, it was definitely in the hundreds. I would agree 200 or 300 sounds about right. Because you got to imagine they're not shelling out hundreds of dollars each. They're just probably shelling out a little bit here and there. So that all adds up, but you got to have a lot of guys doing that to reach 560K.
Even if it's, I mean, I think to get that, you have to really put the fear of God in somebody. So mm-hmm. I would say probably $3,000 is what they were asking. Cause that's, if I'm looking at it from like a criminal perspective of what makes it worth it for you, you have to get a couple, you're not going to do it for $25. Like get
sure. Okay.
An era or something like that. Like you're going to get significant money. Mm-hmm. But this is my advice. Can we do a little staff and CO advice corner for these young sure. troops if you get caught in that?
Please.
I think let your dick pics fly. If you get caught in this kind of scheme, just say fuck it. Be rabbit yourself like 8 Mile. Send your own dick pics out on Twitter, on Facebook, whatever, and just get rid of it that way. Just let it happen. Let it fly. Let your dick go into the air.
What these guys were doing, I think, was saying, surprise, pretending to be the girl, surprise, I'm actually underage. And that was the big blackmail part. So, like, you're going to get charged with a big crime if this comes out. I think that was, like, a big part of it.
Yeah.
But also let your dick pics fly. I mean, I don't mind seeing them. So,
Kate, be careful what you wish for. That's all.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, you're right. That's true. I don't want to. Honestly, that was a weird thing to say. Do not.
Can't be combating dick pics. Kate's like, no, actually they're good. The dick pics are fine. Yeah, I don't think that you should say to give you dick pics. I think you will end up regretting that big time.
You don't know me.
All right. Send Kate your dick pics, everybody. She likes them, I guess. I don't.
The only final note on that story I have is that I think the soldiers hopefully have learned their lesson and they can move on to getting trolled.
What? No and chat. Lessons. I mean,
you by other by Russian
lessons. If it's boots, like the entire time, like those boots learn their lessons. But the one thing that's beautiful about the military, and the reason why, honestly, we can host this podcast and continue on, is because boots have been boots forever. Mm-hmm. That's why I think when people say shit like the Marine Corps is different, the rules might be different. The Marine Corps is inherently the same and will always be the same. Whenever people say, like, oh, the old Corps, things are different when I was in, people have been saying that shit since 1775, for the Army since 1775, the Air Force since, like, 1982 or whenever they were fucking founded, like, 7 years ago. So they don't have the history, but it's the same exact principle always. Boots are going to be boots, and they are constantly going to get fished and trolled online. It's just
what they women be shopping, boots be booting.
Be shopping.
LTs awesome. Be getting lost.
True. That is true, too.
We would be remiss also if, at the start of the podcast, if we didn't address the elephant in the room. Catherine, your hair.
Woo.
Yeah. Hmm. We talked about it on High Haters, but I'll say it. $450. Speaking of getting catfished.
Yeah.
I spent $450 to get my hair done in New York City yesterday. I didn't know the price until I was at the register. They didn't have their prices listed anywhere. And I thought, like, how much could this be? He gave me a shitty trim. Actually, no, I asked for a tiny trim. He cut like 6 inches off my hair, gave me bangs. And then he dyed it. I said, I want to go blonde. He dyed it like super dark brown on the left side of my head. That's it. $450, not including tip.
Not only that, but you also had another financial thing yesterday because you weren't expecting that. The bounce check. You had a bounce check.
I had a bounce check because I wasn't expecting the huge expense of that $450 coming through. So it was just, yeah. And then
you know what I did after we got off the radio last night and you told this story of you weren't expecting that much money to come out and your check bounced. I went out to my military box in my garage and looked through all my different folders because I was going to mail you personal finance for Marines.
I think I need to take an MCI on that now.
Yeah. So for people that are listening that don't know what it is, whenever you are a super junior Marine, in order to pick up corporal, in order to get promoted, there's like 5, I believe, MCIs, the Marine Corps Institute, that they teach you these different things, like weapons maintenance is one. They have personal finance. They have math for Marines. And then you could take just a litany of other shit. Like there's some on warehousing, like it teaches you how to organize boxes, basically like Tetris. There's just a whole bunch of shit that's stupid as hell. And there's principles of leadership and things like that. Personal finance was actually a good one for me. I was like, whoa, that's what interest rates do? I had no idea.
Well, this is the basic type of math and finance that you don't learn in school, but is just ever present in everyday life that everyone needs to know.
Which is shocking.
Yeah.
It's shocking that that's not taught in school.
Well, yeah, unless you have, you know, your parents or, you know, someone that is a mentor that can teach you these things that knows what you actually need to know in the real world, you're never going to learn them. Evident by the fact of my story when I've had that soldier bounce a check on me. So yeah, Kate, if you want, I will help you. I will teach you about finances, basically.
Can I bounce a check off you, too?
Yeah. Kate, were you – this is how I was when I first got my first car that I was the primary signer on. I was just sitting at the dealership and, like, I was thinking to myself, if they say I'm approved for this, no matter what the terms are, I'm going to get this fucking car. So, I mean, they could come back with 10, 12, 15% interest. I have no idea what the difference is. I'm just like, oh, they said I was approved. You could pay for it. I remember there was a time even in when I was getting out of the military, when I was getting out of the Marine Corps and was going on to college, where we went and I applied for a pre-approval for a loan from Navy Federal. And I called the place up and I was like, hey, I'm thinking about going to get a new car. I want to apply for a loan. And they said, okay. So they ran all the different numbers and they came back and they're like, you're approved for a car under $90,000. And
you get a nice car for up to $90,000.
I was like, what the fuck? And they said your minimum monthly payment will be like $1,200 or something like that. And I was thinking, this is why people go bankrupt. Because if that was me 5 years prior and I was junior, I would have been like, oh, the bank says I can afford that. That's what I can afford.
Mm-hmm.
No chance in hell. No, I mean, just like when I got a house and they basically told me that I can afford a house three times the value of what I actually paid for my house. I was thinking, how the fuck do they have their math that wrong? There's no way I could have afforded that payment.
Yeah, well, I mean, the math is such that they take into account, you know, some of your other finances, but obviously no bank will know your finances as well as you do. They only know what you tell them. So it can be a bit misleading. And if you're a young boot, young soldier, you're just not going to know any better. You just think like, oh, I have this much money, I can pay for anything. So,
but you would think if you are a colonel in the Air National Guard of Vermont, that you would know better than to fly your F-16 down for a little bit of a booty call. Catherine, would you like to tell us a little bit about this story?
I would love to. So the commander of the Vermont National Guard, Air National Guard, was quietly forced out of his job after taking an F-16 Fighting Falcon to a booty call in Washington, D.C.
Little booty call.
Yeah. So just after a year of taking command of the Burlington-based 158th Fighter Wing.
Also, shout out to the Coat Factory.
Shout out to Burlington Coat Factory. That's where my coat's from. Anyway, that's why they should have known when they charged me for that expensive haircut yesterday that I couldn't afford it. Anyway, the Burlington-based 158th Fighter Wing, Colonel Thomas Jackson took an F-16 flight to Washington, D.C. for a work trip that doubled as a romantic rendezvous with an Army colonel who worked at the Pentagon. Jackman was scheduled to attend a conference at Andrews Air Force Base, which is like, all right, okay. While the guard says pilots do not typically use their planes to attend conferences, but Jackman, as wing commander, had the ultimate authority. And I just want to pause and say, can you imagine being at the level where it's like, oh, should I take like transportation out or should I just fly my F-16?
But pilots do that shit all the time. I mean, because they have to get their hours in. Like I know a pilot very specifically who had to get, he was in the command element and they still have to fly a certain amount of hours a month.
Right, right.
He was stationed in San Diego and would take his helicopter up to Oakland because he was a Raiders fan. So on Saturday, he would take the whole crew. They would go up to Oakland. They would do the different maintenance and shit like that. They would watch the game. They would go to the game because you could buy StubHub or SeatGeek tickets cheap as shit. In Oakland, and then they would fly back to San Diego. That's just what they do. But I think it's because he's gonna get his dick wet that people got upset.
That's the weird part. But he got caught with a string of emails between him and the unnamed colonel for their romantic relationship, as well as several interviews with guard members who knew about it. So like, not only was he like sending all these emails on his work email, but he was open about it. And that made me think, like, can you imagine being at the level where you feel untouchable, that you can be like, yeah, I'm taking my F-16 down to bang this other colonel. Like, yeah. Who are you? Like, who? Well, obviously a high ranking colonel, but I mean.
Well, no, this is what happened. This is what happens, though, especially, you know, when you get to that rank, if there's no one else, obviously he's not, there's people that outrank him, but when there's no one else around consistently or in your daily job that outranks you, you kind of start to feel yourself a little bit. And I just think back when I was out on a random outpost in Iraq, and there was only my commander who outranked me out there. So I remember me and the other lieutenants, we were kind of acting in a way that we probably wouldn't have acted if there were a bunch of other majors and colonels walking around. And I think it's just the nature.
You heard it here first, Captain Khan's undisciplined. And unbelievable. You heard it here first. Unreal.
No, but I can understand how he would act like this. But I definitely think it's a very cool move.
I also don't know how much those people actually knew. They could just be saying that they have. What this reminds me of is Airman O'Malley and the longtime stoolie Colonel Nathan R. Jepson's film, A Few Good Men.
Brick by brick.
They bring in the Airman O'Malley from the airfield at Andrews Air Force Base, and they say, what was he going to testify? That they absolutely knew nothing about it. That might have been what happened here. What this reminds me of is a little bit of parenting, too, because when my kids get caught doing something and they think that they are stunting, that they are having big dick energy all over the place, where my daughter, for instance, will be going to her middle school's football game, and she'll be like, oh, Dad, the game's going to overtime. They post the scores online. I know they're not going into overtime. They got beat by fucking 40. I know they're not going to overtime. Yep. I'm coming to get your little ass now. You're not getting 20 more minutes on me. And and then when she says that in front of her friends, I imagine the face is exactly like what Colonel Jackman's was when he was ordered to fly home on a commercial flight that another lieutenant colonel had to travel from Burlington to Washington, D.C. to pick up his F-16 and fly it home. That is the biggest. You could take away my rank. You could take away some of my privileges. You could take away my command. But don't you dare send somebody junior to me to come get my fucking F-16. Because it's your name that's painted on the side. Yep. When you're riding an F-16, they got your name on the side of the bitch.
Yeah.
That's and pretty nice. I also want to make – can I make a public declaration right now?
Sure. Yes.
Pilots no longer nerds. I love this story. I love the fact
I
doing this. This pilot totally fucks.
I think it's so cool. And you know, call me shallow, whatever. But you know, it's like Madonna said, it's a material world, and I'm a material girl. I would love to be able to do something like this. I can remember when I was in high school and I was a caddy. I always had a lot of cash on me. One of my moves, I would take a girl to the movies. I'd pay with $100 bill. Just to stunt. I remember senior year, I was going to the junior prom with this girl that, you know, invited me to her prom. I asked my buddy's dad to borrow his Mercedes S500 just to pick her up.
Yeah, dude.
Because I was about that material life.
When my wife was when she was my girlfriend and she was going to Mississippi State and I was at Quantico, if you'd have gave me access to Air Force One, I don't even know how to fly a helicopter, but I'd give it a go to fly down there and go get some cheeks.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, the quality of booty that you're going to get when you show up in your flight uniform. I mean, everybody knows that we're friendly with Congressman Kinzinger from Illinois. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You see how hot that dude looks in his pilot shit? And he's a congressman. He flies home from D.C. to Illinois. I mean, he's got to be, like, crushing it.
Swimming. There's something about a lady in a lady pilot suit too, where because I feel like people still don't expect it, and when they come out of the Black Hawk and it's like, fuck yeah, like I feel like those ladies out.
I just imagine them
if I was a single fella and I was getting with the helicopter pilot and she hopped out in her uniform, I'd be like, peg me daddy, like that's exactly
just imagine her popping out of the chopper.
Please don't popping make off that helmet,
up. Hair flowing.
Please don't make that a social clip. Peg me daddy.
Yeah. I'm gonna make it a drop for radio instead.
That's right. Fuck it. Let's go. All
right. Yeah, throw that in there. But yeah, I think I would love to roll up to like my high school reunion in an F-16 and just be like, oh, hey guys, just be real casual about it. Like, oh, this whole thing.
Yeah.
Well,
that was my move with like the movies. It was like, oh, this is just like a casual run of the mill thing, but I'm going to pay with this $100 bill.
Go ahead, get extra butter.
If you could show up in a plane somewhere right now, not like Army, Navy or any of that bullshit. Yeah. We'll talk about that enough in the coming weeks. Where would you go if you were able to fly an F-16?
Wow. That's a really good question. Cause I feel like I don't go enough places. that other people would be there that I could impress them.
You know what I would like to do for content? What? I would like to find, I wouldn't do an F, I would take an Osprey because they can land like a helicopter, but they can fly fast.
Right.
Dave's doing one of his little stunting pizza reviews on Nantucket.
Yeah.
Find out where it's going to be. He's doing a review and I come over the place and land in an Osprey. You'd be like, mind if I get a bite? Take one bite, get back on, fly away. There's a streamer flying in the back that says download, subscribe, review, 0 Block 30.
I can't beat that.
Check with him. He might allow that. I think we can get that done.
If you're an Osprey pilot, hit us up.
We'll talk to that lieutenant colonel from Vermont and be like, hey, he's good at taking
he's not a command and he's born. He's probably got nothing else going on.
Yeah, fly us down there. Mm-hmm. Yeah, have you guys ever, though, I was thinking of him on the commercial flight. One, do you think they put him back in like zone 8 And two, do you think as he was flying back home, like that had to be the worst fucking flight? Like,
no, I don't think they put him in zone eight because he's probably smart enough and he's in the Air Force. They fly, they go in their civilian clothes everywhere.
He actually had to fly the plane back.
He gets on board one. I'm boarding group one where they say, thank you for your service. And he's like, yeah, I'm not going to be in active duty much longer.
Just taking advantage while I still can.
But I did get them cheeks. I did get them cheeks. Ridiculous.
Peg me. Yeah.
Peg me, daddy. If you don't want somebody to show up in your house to peg you, you might get our friends at Simply Safe. If you've been thinking about getting a Simply Safe home security system, but I've been waiting for the holidays when all tech deals come out, you've made a smart move. Because right now you can get a great deal with Simply Safe for the holidays. It's an amazing deal. They rarely do anything like this, but they're doing it for our listeners. Simply Safe is a great protection for your home and your family. They never make you sign a contract, unlike our beloved Marine Corps, Army, Navy, and Air Force, and Coast Guard. Shout out, Nico. They are no hidden fees, and Simply Safe's around-the-clock professional monitoring is just $14.99 a month. I love it. It's so easy. Once you have, if you have Wi-Fi, you just plug them shits in, and you're basically good to go. You can, you don't even need All Business Pete here to set it up for you. It's easy. They're always great, getting great reviews on CNET, PC Magazine, and Wirecutter. They all say Simply Safe is the best security system there is. Protect your home today and get a great deal on home security. Go to simplysafe.com/CBT to get this special holiday offer and make sure that you use our URL so they know that we sent you. That's simplysafe.com/CBT, simplysafe.com/CBT. Khan's got to sit down with basically viral superstar Noah Galloway. I remember when Noah went on the Ellen Show, and basically everyone in the world, guys, girls, everyone wanted to fuck Noah.
Yeah, he's a handsome fella.
He is. Handsome. I mean, that's cutting him short. This dude is sexy. I'm having a rough episode. I'm saying, Daddy.
I was just about to say, I don't want to overkill it, but I feel like Noah could peg you.
Before we started the show, I told Khan that I was dragging. I might have overcorrected a little bit.
Yeah, maybe right. So.
Anyways, here's the damn interview.
All right, anytime on Zero Blog 30, we have a magazine cover model as a guest, I always try to make sure my shit is squared away, and that is exactly who we have right now, speaking to retired Army Sergeant Noah Galloway. Noah, how you doing, buddy?
I'm good. Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, you have a very interesting story. You have a lot that I want to touch on, but I guess we'll just get started at the beginning. How is it that you found your way into the Army?
Well, you know, I my mom's family is all military, and my mom was always pushing me in that direction, but I didn't see myself fitting in that world. And I was in college when 9/11 happened, and watching that on the news, everything happened. I mean, that was enough for me. I immediately dropped out of school, enlisted. But then once I got in, I fell in love with the Army. I fell in love with being an infantryman. And I had to go to my mom and tell her she was right.
Yeah, no, I mean, I feel like that's obviously that is a common answer. 9/11 obviously inspired so many people to join the military. And I think it, in some ways, it's kind of like a drug. You get addicted to it. You get addicted to the lifestyle and the people. And obviously, you know, serving in the famed 101st Airborne Division, I'm sure that had a lot to do with it as well.
Yeah. I mean, I tell people all the time, I was like, you know, patriotism will get you in the military, but it's like once you get there, it's that brotherhood. There's so much about it. And after that first deployment to Iraq in 03, I was like, oh, this is it. This is a career.
Right. And it just kind of clicked for you. And then what happened to you on your second deployment?
So the second deployment, I was, we, you know, being a light infantry unit, we did have some Humvees that we would use because the area we were in and southwest Baghdad, in that area they call the Triangle of Death,
right,
we were driving a lot. And one night I was driving one of the Humvees, and we had our headlights off, night vision goggles on, and what I didn't see was a tripwire stretched across the road, and where my front tires hit it, it detonated a roadside bomb large enough that when it hit this 9,000-pound armored Humvee, it sent it flying through the air and landed in the canal running adjacent to the road.
Jesus.
And I don't remember any of it. I woke up 5 days later in a hospital at Walter Reed Army Medical Center, and my parents were there, and it was all news to me that I'd lost my left arm and left leg and had injuries to my right leg, my right hand. My jaw was shattered, so my mouth was wired shut. And it was like, for me, it was just, I just woke up one day and there were all these injuries.
And I mean, I'd imagine, did it feel like a dream when, you know, when you wake up and people are telling you the
reality of everything? I mean, there was like, you know, I woke up briefly in Germany and I was so clueless to what was going on. I can still remember, it's like I had a dream that someone had told me that these roadside bombs were large enough that, you know, your bones could fuse together. I mean, that obviously was a dream. Mm-hmm. But my mouth was wired shut. I didn't understand why. I thought my jaw had fused shut and I was trying to open it and it was clueless what was going on. I was kind of woke up, was in this dream, and then went back to sleep and then woke up again and my parents talking to me.
Mm-hmm. And then you're in Walter Reed. And then where did your Army career go from there as a double amputee?
Well, so from there, you know, I spent a year at Walter Reed and then moved back to Alabama. Being injured, I didn't know. I'd go through different phases of thinking this is okay, I'll be fine, to being extremely angry, to being very emotional and sad. And then when I got up and started moving around, I left Walter Reed after about a year and I moved back to Alabama. And I already had one son who was just a year old, and I had two more, and I've suffered a lot of depression and denial of what I was going through. And that's where a lot of the struggles came in.
Right. And you turned to alcohol, to drugs, to pills, and kind of
found yourself in a little
bit of a spiral.
One thing that I did, after the injury, I had a lot of medication I was on, and I decided I wanted to come off of it. So I did. And so then I thought I'd beaten the whole aspect of being, you know, on too much medicine, but I was self-medicating with alcohol.
Right.
So that's where, you know, part of me thought I'd overcome this huge obstacle, but I was completely in denial of what I was actually doing. Because I was self-medicating with the alcohol. I was not taking care of myself. I was eating crap, you know, and I was always into fitness. And that this was the worst shape I'd ever been in my life.
You definitely didn't look like a soldier at this point.
No.
Okay, no, and then was there some sort of aha light bulb moment that clicked for you and you decided, I got to make a change? Or did someone say something to you? And how did you then get on that path towards making fitness a very big part of your life?
Well, so the moment that I had was I walked out into my living room and my three kids, as young as they were sitting on the couch, and this terrifying thought crossed my mind. I realized that to my two boys, I was showing them what a man is, and that's what they're going to grow up to be. Mm-hmm. To my little girl, I was showing her how a man's supposed to act, and that's what she's going to look for one day. And I was not anybody I wanted my boys to be or my little girl to end up with. Now, when I tell people that, I'm like, I didn't just fix everything. Mm-hmm. I still screwed up. I still made mistakes. But every time I'd fall flat on my face, it was the motivation of those kids to be better that would motivate me to get up, push harder, go a little further. And it just got easier and easier after that. I had to have that one thing in my life to be my motivation every time I screwed up. Mm-hmm. So like life's not a movie. You don't just fix everything at once.
Right. There's no montage that goes 30 seconds and all of a sudden you're better.
But in life, my kids are my motivation in everything I do in business and everything. Because fitness, you know, as when I was a trainer, I would tell people, have something that is stronger than your fears, because your fears will hold you back or make you decide, hey, this is far enough for me. But my kids were more important than that, and that's what kept me driving in everything I did and continue to do today.
Mm-hmm. So in so many ways, your kids really saved your life.
Oh, without a doubt. I'm extremely close to my kids. We have a very good relationship, and that saying of when people say I'd never change anything in my past, when I say that, I mean it. If it weren't for me going to the military, if I hadn't have been injured, if I hadn't have gone through that depression, the relationship I have with my three kids today wouldn't be as strong as it is. I mean, mm-hmm. without a doubt, I'd still love them and hope to be a decent dad.
Right.
But I'm striving to be the best all the time because of what I've gone through and what they've helped me through, whether they realize it or not.
Mm-hmm. And so you got into the fitness lifestyle. What was the mm-hmm. biggest obstacle that you had to overcome? Because obviously as a WMPT, it's almost as if you have to reteach yourself everything.
You know, that was a good and a bad thing. There was no books, magazines, mm-hmm. nothing on the internet that showed you how to work out missing arm or leg.
Right.
Well, I got into fitness when I was 12 years old, and nobody was teaching me how to work. I was sneaking into the fitness area of our local community center to work out and read everything I could. So it was like I was starting all over again, which was kind of exciting. Mm-hmm. I joined a 24-hour gym, but I'd go late at night when nobody was there.
Sure.
And I was just trying to figure out how I was going to work out my right side, how to work out my left side. A lot of times in fitness, you know, people push, pull, or upper or lower body. No one ever goes right side, left side.
Right, right.
Well, that's what I started. Yeah, that's yeah. what I started doing.
Mm-hmm.
And it was because the workouts were completely different on how I'd work. I realized I could take an ankle strap, put it on my arm, my residual limb, and hook to a cable machine and work my chest, my shoulder, and my back, and mm-hmm. then use kettlebells and machines and everything else to work the other side. And I got a running leg, and I started running. So it was a slow process, but it was something that kept me busy,
mm-hmm.
kept me occupied. So then I had people always talk about purpose in life.
Mm-hmm.
Well, suddenly I had a new purpose. One was to be a better father to my children. Two, I had this goal in the gym to get back into shape,
mm-hmm.
and those components really helped get me out of that depression. On top of the fact that I realized it was okay to go see a doctor and go through mental health.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that's such a common theme that we talk about on this show all the time. And how do you communicate to people back then and now that it's okay to fight your depression or fight your mental health battles?
Well, here's the thing is, like, you know, as veterans, I always remind other veterans, I'm like, when in combat do we do anything alone? We mm-hmm. do everything as a team. Even mm-hmm. when you're not in combat, I mean, basic training, the buddy system starts there.
Right.
We do everything as a team. So I tell people all the time, I'm like, look, if you're going through something, open up, talk to somebody, you know? And then when you want to get a mission completed, you want the best.
Mm-hmm.
And these doctors, that's their job. That's what they're professionals when it comes to that. That's who you need to go and talk to. And then when it comes to health and fitness, it's not just going to the gym. It's not just eating healthy food. You have to make sure your cholesterol is good, you know, your body mass index is good, but you also want to make sure your mental health is good. That mm-hmm. is all part of the same thing. You don't have to be sick to go to a doctor. You go to a doctor to get checked up to continue to be the best you can be. And whether you're not having issues, there's nothing wrong with going to mental health. And if there is something going on, well, then the brain is the most complicated organ in our body. It has to be taken care of. And sometimes you can go to a doctor and it's just talking things out that needs to be done. Sometimes there's a chemical imbalance. Whatever it is, there's nothing wrong with taking medicine. If someone has, you know, high cholesterol and they get put on cholesterol medicine, well, is that a problem?
Right.
No.
No.
So I think that this stigma that we have with mental health has to go away, and that's going to go away with more and more people talking about it. And
right.
we're starting to see that. I mean, Dwayne Johnson, The Rock, he's come out talking about it.
Mm-hmm.
You have Prince Harry has been open about his mental health after, you know, his mother with everything that went through with Princess Diana. You know, it's, mm-hmm. so it's like more and more people are coming forward, and that's what we need.
Yeah.
More people talking about it, so it's not this strange thing that no one wants to discuss.
No, you're absolutely right, and especially as you mentioned some of the names you said, people with a platform. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, you got into fitness. Was there anyone along the way that kind of showed you the ropes on how to work out as WMPT, or anyone that served as any sort of motivation for you in the gym?
You know, I've been asked this question before, and I always feel like a jerk when I say it, but no, there wasn't.
That's okay.
Now we have tons of – I mean, you have Derek Wieda, all these guys and women that are just animals out there. Their injuries are not stopping them. But I was injured early enough that, like, I didn't come across – there were people before me. I just didn't come across them.
Right.
And at the same time, it was motivating for me to be in the gym and doing it on my own.
Mm-hmm. But then I think you ultimately made a difference for so many veterans – when you found yourself on the cover of Men's Health as the ultimate men's health guy, how did that come about that you went from WMPT, Lane and Walter Reed, to all the turmoil in your life, to getting back into the fitness lifestyle, to Men's Health Magazine?
Well, so when I got back into fitness, you know, being here in Birmingham, Alabama, I started making a name for myself in the fitness world just around here.
Mm-hmm.
All the I'd bounce around. Then when I, because then when I started working out a lot, I'd visit different gyms, and I was making a name for myself. And then I started running races, you know, Tough Mudder,
right,
Spartan races, marathons, all these different things. And I started building an audience there. Well, then Men's Health has always had a famous person on the cover, and they decided they wanted to find the ultimate guy.
Mm-hmm.
And they encouraged people to apply online to try to win this cover. And there were 1,300 men that entered. And I gained a lot of attention online, social media, but then the rules said that the online voting only made up 10% of the decision. The mm-hmm. judges had to decide. Well, it was narrowed down to, you know, 15, you know, 1,000, then 100, then 20, and then 10. And I was in the top 10.
Mm-hmm.
And I was the only person in the top 10 who was in the top 10 of the online voting. Everyone else didn't make the cut.
Okay.
So I didn't know how it was going to go. They had three essay questions we had to answer in a 30-second video. And when I answered the questions, I was sitting there, and before I sent it, I was like, you know what, I'm going to list all my races.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't, didn't ask for it. I just did it. Well, then I ended up winning the cover, and afterwards I became friends with everybody at Men's Health. And the president told me, he said, or the senior editor, whatever you call it in the magazine,
mm-hmm.
he told me that the judges, some of them liked me, some of them weren't sold on me until I sent in all my races. They said I had more races under my belt than all these guys who had all their limbs. And they were like, this is it.
Wow.
So that me just saying, you know what, I'm going to list all my races really helped me get that cover. And then when I made that cover, I mean, Men's Health is the world's largest men's magazine.
Mm-hmm.
It was, you know, I was the first veteran and amputee to ever grace the cover of that magazine. It got a ton of attention, and I had veterans reaching out to me, family members of veterans that were thanking me for being a positive image.
Right.
And it was so rewarding, because I'll be honest with you, when the cover first was announced, I had this fear that veterans were going to look down on me like I was being cocky, and I didn't know how it was going to look. And I didn't want to be mm-hmm. that guy, but then people started reaching out to me, and it felt really good. And then, of course, I ended up on Ellen.
Yep.
Ellen DeGeneres' show. And that, after that show aired, I mean, the phone just started ringing. All these shows wanted me.
Right, right. No, I mean, I can remember. I have a subscription to Men's Health, and I distinctly remember when your issue came in the mail, and I read your story, and I just said, wow, look at this guy not making any excuses and continuing to live a productive life. And you impacted me as a veteran. Did you have any idea that you know, when you were applying for this cover, that you would have such an impact on the veteran community?
No idea. I mean, I was completely clueless. Only thing, like I told you, when I feared that I was going to look arrogant or cocky mm-hmm. to other veterans,
mm-hmm.
that was what I feared. I know I had no idea that it was going to be a positive impact and that so many veterans, but it felt really good because, you know, part of my struggle when I got injured, yeah, I lost an arm and a leg. That sucked.
Right.
But I found a career, and I loved the military, and then it was gone. And I thought I'd lost all connection to that. And then that was the turning point of me realizing, no, I'm still part of a family. I wasn't, just because I was injured and I'm out doesn't mean I'm not part of that family anymore.
Right.
And that's when things started to change. And it really, I mean, I was already on the upswing, you know, in being a better person and feeling good about myself. But that took me to another level of being comfortable with who I am.
Sure. I mean, I got to imagine just getting back in shape and being that role model that you mentioned for your children, that in and of itself was the achievement of the goal, whereas all this other stuff now is just gravy. I mean, we talked about cover of Men's Health, then you find yourself on Ellen, and then things really start to snowball to where you find yourself on Dancing with the Stars.
Yeah, that, and that's the craziest thing.
You got to be the first amputee, right, to be on Dancing with the Stars?
No, there've been a couple of others.
Oh, okay.
But before Dancing with the Stars, Survivor wanted me,
mm.
and I was excited about it. But it's X amount of weeks, no contact back home. you get voted off, you stay with the crew,
right.
No contact back home. And I was like, I appreciate it, but I got three kids that are more important than the television show.
Mm-hmm.
So I turned it down. Another show called, same thing, turned it down. Dancing with the Stars called, and they were like, do you have any dance experience? I was like, no, you know? And I even told them, I was like, I've heard of your show, I've never seen it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I didn't know anything about Dancing with the Stars.
Mm-hmm.
And they weren't offended. I'm not their demographic. But they were interested in me being an arm amputee because they said they've had people missing their legs.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, well, no, you've had people missing their feet. I'm missing my entire knee.
Let me clarify.
Everything.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then there was silence on the phone. They did not consider that because they were unaware.
Right.
I was like, it's a whole other ball game.
Yeah. How's this guy going to dance?
Yeah. Well, then they were adamant about having me. They were like, look, we'll put you in a house in L.A. for the duration of the time of the show. And I was like, look, thanks, but no thanks. I have three kids here in Alabama. They're more important. I can't do it.
Mm-hmm.
Without hesitation, Dina Katz, the executive producer, said, that's okay. We'll send your dancer to Birmingham. You'll rehearse there and fly back and forth for the live show.
Okay.
And I was like, crap. I mean, I guess I'll do it. Like,
right.
I didn't have an argument
right.
not to do it. So I honestly didn't think I'd last very long on the show. And halfway through the season, I was thinking, this has run its course.
Mm-hmm.
I'm about done. And I did a dance to Toby Keith's American Soldier.
Mm-hmm.
And Sharna Burgess, my dance partner, the dancer, choreographs everything. She creates the dance, the image she wants, whatever, you know, what you're wearing, everything. And she wanted to show kind of my remembrance of my military experience, my injury, everything.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a very powerful contemporary dance. And in the dance, we did a lift. I picked her up with one arm, pushing with one leg.
Right. It's an impressive lift. It is very impressive
yeah.
lift because it's hard
and
enough to lift a woman with two arms. So to do it with one
yeah,
is very impressive. It was
a really cool moment. And at the end of the dance, I got a standing ovation from all the judges, the entire studio audience. It felt incredible, but it was the next day. All the voicemails and messages I got on social media and everything from veterans that were inspired. I mean, they told me that I was bringing in a demographic that was watching that show that they've never had.
Mm-hmm.
Military, veterans, they were supporting me and what I was doing, putting myself out there. I mean, it's a dancing show. How many?
Yeah, that takes courage because you didn't really have much dancing experience, did you?
None. And the fact that veterans were supporting me, I mean, when you think veterans, you don't think, yeah.
No, you don't think ballroom dancing.
Stars. Yeah. But it was the support of me putting myself out there and you know, not being a douchebag on television.
Right.
You know what I mean? It was,
yeah.
I was, you know, just pushing myself, and that motivated me to just keep going as hard as I could and keep rehearsing day in and day out, and then doing the whole 10 weeks and coming in third place in a dancing show. I mean, and then it turns out that show is pretty big.
Yeah, so, to say the least.
So my entire life changed from that. But then, you know, what's funny is because of that attention I got, yeah, suddenly I can go anywhere in the country and someone recognizes me.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, they know who I am. And I have people still come up to me and they're shaking when they take a picture with me.
Yeah.
I mean, it is a big deal.
How do your kids react to that when they see dad getting recognized?
They're used to it.
Mm.
You know, that people are good about, we take a picture, we'll chit chat for a minute and we'll move on if mm-hmm. I'm with the kids. What was really good was, you know, stepping back, you know, I told you when I got into fitness, I made a name for myself in Birmingham.
Right.
Then I was running races, and I made a name for myself, you know, doing in that world. And so then it was then Men's Health, Ellen, and then Dancing with the Stars. It was all in my world. A lot of people didn't know me until Dancing with the Stars,
mm-hmm.
but in my world, it was steps I was taking. So it wasn't overwhelming after Dancing with the Stars to have people recognize me. I was
right.
building up, and it was fine for me and the kids.
Yeah, so obviously you didn't set out to become any sort of recognizable figure, but then you became one, and you became sort of a face for wounded veterans. Why do you think your story resonated more, and why do you think you found yourself in that space as opposed to any other wounded veteran who has overcome difficulties in their life?
You know, I don't know, because there are, you know, I'm not the only, it's been awesome to see all these other veterans that are now getting all this recognition. Mm-hmm. I think social media has been huge for that. We have, I mean, look, you know, who, everyone knows who Matt Best is.
And right. His,
he has incredible videos. He's very successful entrepreneur. And I think social media has a big help in that. You know, I mentioned Derek Weed. There's all these different guys that are all doing the same thing. We're just putting ourselves out there. Mm-hmm. And I think that, like, after I did Dance with the Stars, I wrote my book, Living with No Excuses. And I honestly think if I'd have done that book just a year earlier, I wouldn't have been as brutally honest as I was. Mm-hmm. And when I did the book, it was hard to do. I hired a friend of mine to help me write it. And I was brutally honest in my depression and struggles and mistakes. And when that book hit the shelves, I thought, all these people that watched me on Dance with the Stars and loved me are about to hate me. They're going to see a side of me they don't like.
Right.
But no one acted that way. They were so happy that I didn't write a book that was, oh, look how amazing I am. I was like, mm-hmm. No, I'm going to talk about what a screw up I am.
Right, honesty.
And yeah. And
well, I think honesty always resonates with people.
I'm all about, you know, a different lifestyle now where I want the best for my kids and make sure I'm being the best father I can be. And the fact that I've been open about my depression and struggles and mental health, I love that I go places and that comes up all the time. Mm-hmm. And people want to talk about it and I want to share it.
Yeah, well, Noah, we really appreciate you sharing that message because, as I've mentioned, in our veteran community, it's so important to have people like you now to have that platform to say, hey, it's okay to have these problems. We're here to help. We're here to get better. And you really have been a champion for that. So we appreciate you doing that. We appreciate you joining us today. And I wish you and your family all the best in the future going forward. And I will look for your next magazine cover soon.
I appreciate it. And I'll tell you what, you saying that, you know, as I mentioned earlier, the way things come back full circle, you saying that and the way that veterans in the military have been supportive of what I've gone through has really helped me because it showed me that I may be out, but we're all one big family.
That's
and
right.
We don't forget each other. We support even when we're on, if we got a buddy that's on a dancing show. You know?
maybe at that time more so than others. Maybe yeah. He needs it more than others.
Yes. So, Noah, right. I appreciate that very much.
Shout out Noah again for coming on the show. We appreciate it. There's a couple more stories that we wanted to get into today. One of which is, I don't know if people know this about Kate, huge K-pop fan.
Mm. Big K-pop fan. Play a clip, Brent. They've come across, they sure do. They've come across, We are just, welcome to our pegging episode of Zero Block 30.
When the whole squad gets pegged.
Instead of getting pinned. Yeah. Anyway, so K-pop, Korean pop music, is huge, like an enormous, enormous phenomenon. And it's even kind of a big thing here in the States. Like, I have friends that are really into it. But in Korea, it is, what's the rule? For those who don't know, all men aged 18 to 35 in South Korea are required to serve in the army for approximately 21 months, depending on the enlisted branch, including K-pop idols. So it often leads to K-pop groups missing a number of members during promotions or big concerts. And right now there are 8 different, like, huge name K-pop stars that are going into the military. Like, they don't have a choice. They have to go. And so I went down this rabbit hole of people on Twitter who are just like so sad that like Jinky is going in the military and I'm like, I can't accept this. And who's the Shinee and Onu are trying to release an album before they go into the military. Oh no, like their fans are just besides themselves that they have to go into the military now. And it made me think, like, I tried to flip it and imagine that here in the States where it's like, oh man, Justin Timberlake's releasing that album and then he's off to boot camp. Like, that really stinks.
I think the closest thing that we would have to that is when those players from like West Point or the Naval Academy are good enough to make it to the NFL and people are like,
yeah,
just let them do it. Like, there was a player, Sinchu Chu, who played for the Indians. I remember when he was basically rookie of the year and had to take 2 years off from baseball. To go, they wouldn't let him out of it, and he still had to do it, even though he was a very successful baseball player making in the millions of dollars. He still had to go back home and serve in the military.
How successful was and well known was Elvis when he joined the army? Was he Elvis when he joined the army? I feel like he was. Yeah.
Yeah, but I think it was kind of a, like, they knew he wasn't going to the front line. It was kind of, it was kind of a morale type of thing. But yeah, he was pretty well known. But that, yeah, that's a good one. That's probably the closest thing that we have on that end.
Pat Tillman
was a big one.
There was another guy. There was another guy from the Chiefs whose name's escaping me. I think he was a corner. I don't remember his name.
No, there was a guy, Coffey, who used to play.
He
played for Alabama, and then he went on to the NFL. And I think he's still in. I think he's like a Ranger.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's pretty cool. But these guys, again, like, they don't have a choice. So if you were an Ultimate Commander and you could pick three musicians to be in your unit, who are you picking and what role are they serving?
Okay. Cons, you want to start it out?
Sure. I will go. I'm just going to assume, you know, I'm taking three guys. They're all going to be in my artillery platoon. I'm taking Justin Timberlake. I know he's older than me, but I'm going to put him in a rank lower than me, make him an E4. He can just, you know, be that E4 that's kind of goofy on missions and keeps everything light.
Mm-hmm.
I'm bringing Bruce to be my crusty old Sergeant Major, just because he's a bit older, but he's got a lot of stories to tell. And I'm bringing Bradley Cooper. He's a singer now.
He is. Sure. I would qualify him as a singer.
You know, dropping some black eyes from A Star Is Born. And he can be another lieutenant in a different platoon because he'd be cool to play golf with.
There you go. That's easy enough.
All right. I'll go next. I would bring in Marilyn Manson.
Can I just say that's the first time that Cons has ever done this game right?
Yeah, good job, Cons. Well done.
Turning the corner.
Well done. I would pick Marilyn Manson, and he would be an admin clerk because he just looks like one. Like, they all look really disgruntled.
Now, would he be able to join? Would he pass medical with all those missing ribs?
No. Because as his staff and CO, whenever he fails room inspection, inevitably, like, what were you doing up here instead of cleaning, sucking your own dick?
Perfect.
One of the all-time great urban legends.
My next one would be the Yodel Kid. I think I would have him just because I would make him do – he'd be the permanent – his only job would basically be, you know, like when you played backyard football, you had all-time quarterback. Mm-hmm. He would be all-time cadence caller. I think that he would be fun. In your love, you're right. I think that would be a good time to have the Yodel Kid out there. And my last one would be the Panic at the Disco singer for the same reason, just to switch it up. I only care about cadence and run calling. I think that he would be good at it. Panic at the Disco guy would be a great cadence caller.
Oh, I like that thought. I couldn't help but notice none of you picked women to be in your units. That's fine.
Well, Marilyn Manson kind of qualifies.
Well, he's got great hair. He's got great hair. Number one, Cardi B is my sergeant. She says it like it is. She's raunchy as hell.
It's Cardi B.
Yeah, she wouldn't mind having these bloody shoes if things went bad. That was awful, Kate. Oh, my God. But I feel like she's raunchy. She's funny. She just doesn't give a fuck. She tells it like it is. She'd be a great sergeant. My crusty, 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 crusty old gunny is Courtney Love. She's got bruises all over herself for no reason. Her sleeves aren't rolled right.
What's her MOS?
It's Motor T.
Motor T. Do it.
This whole crew is Motor T. I'm running a
ripping
Motor T.
Sigs.
Yeah, we're all, me and the gals are all ripping.
You would have been great at Motor T, just hanging out in the motor pool, ripping.
Sitting on
sigs.
The hood of a Humvee, ripping Sigs. Yes, that I was in the
hoagies.
Crushing hoogs, smoking a cake on the hood of the Humvee, bro. That would have been great. Courtney Love would be the crustiest of gunnies. And then
she might even be the master sergeant, like the crust.
Oh yeah, she's just been there forever. But she's not afraid to say it like it is, or be extremely inappropriate.
Yeah.
And she drinks like a fish. Well, now she might be sober, but I'm talking old Courtney Love, whatever.
She'll always be a drunk in our books.
Yeah, Courtney Love in her prime.
Yeah. And then on the officer side, Beyonce.
See, I thought you were going to go different. I'm surprised you went with officer side. I would have had Beyonce be the board marine.
The what?
She would have been a board marine. Like,
what's
can you
board marine?
where you go on boards and you win like meritorious boards and shit like that.
Imagine how, weren't we all bored?
Imagine how great Beyonce would have looked in Alphas.
Yeah, she would.
She would, but I feel like she just knows what's up. Her work ethic is insane.
So you made her an officer?
Yeah. Kate,
I think you messed
up.
No. If I want someone representing my Motor T lot, I want it to be the best of the best.
Beyonce would never be Motor T.
don't tell her I said that. But she would
have been PAO at the very least.
Well, she'd be a PAO for my motor pool because we'd be making all sorts of mistakes. Me, Cardi B, and Courtney Love.
Motor pool POA or PAO. That's a good one to have.
I think you guys are just jealous. So
no, well, Kate, I'm thrilled to hear that you think because Beyonce has a great work ethic, she'd be a great officer.
I feel like the pod just took a huge step back.
She would play golf with you.
Yeah, that was perfect.
A huge step back for the pod. we have another dick stories. I just want to proclaim now, we have the dick story of the pilots in San Diego that got in trouble. A couple years ago, there was another story that happened. Now there's a B-52 bomber squadron who the commander of that got in trouble for drawing dicks in the cockpit. I don't understand why these higher level officers are getting in trouble for this. I think it should be embraced. And I want to say this as a whole for the DOD. The DOD is being pussies about dicks. I think we got to stop it.
As we start drawing equal pussy, we need more pussy drawings.
Oh, yeah. Well,
I feel like that's harder to draw.
I do too. I've
never seen in a military porta potty, I have never seen an anatomically correct pussy drawing.
I've seen some.
Anatomically correct?
Well, I don't know where the clitoris should go. I think that's the hard part. Like, you never can remember if it's at the bottom or the top. I think that.
Yeah, it's on your taint. Yeah. Yep.
That's.
Jesus.
Anyway.
I was going to say that the taint is the clit of the asshole, but I decided not to.
I'm glad you didn't say that the taint is the clit of the asshole. That'd be weird.
Thank you for holding back restraint. On that.
Yeah, that you're welcome.
Fantastic.
You know what? I think that's. Or do we have any save rounds alibis?
8:30 Sunday night. Be by a computer. West Point is releasing the uniforms for the Army Navy game, and from what I've heard, they're going to be excellent again.
Man, that sounds.
I do like when they show the uniforms. I'm not gonna lie.
Kate, anything
that
for you?
Razzle dazzle. Yeah, I just. So when I was trying to comfort myself, I went down that haircut rabbit hole, and
oh, yeah.
I wound up doing a little bit of looking at Yelp reviews of some haircut places near military bases yesterday, and I just wanted to read some that just made me laugh a little bit.
Okay.
So here's one from, I took these from Oceanside, California. My boyfriend went in for a haircut and he came out looking like a disgruntled soccer player, whatever that is. The barber does not know how to taper, and my dude's hair now looks like some kind of Dumb and Dumber horror cut. Lasted 10 minutes and it's crooked all around. It's not really that funny. It just made me feel better. And then I like this one. Shout out to that beautiful lady that didn't mention the heinous fart I ripped in her chair, saving us both the embarrassment. Haircut is always on point too, if you care about that sort of thing. And in the picture that was on the Yelp review, he's like definitely military. So I really like that.
I think because, I mean, you have to get your haircut once a week in the Marine Corps. Like every single Monday you had to come in with a super fresh haircut. That haircut culture there, you get roasted so much for a bad haircut.
Oh, yeah.
You're just going to assume that you got a barracks cut. Then you're going to get in trouble for having a barracks cut. Haircut life sucks. Like, it really does. You're either going to look like – there is no average haircut. You either love it or you hate it.
Right.
That's the way that haircut life goes. But I wanted to mention one thing. Last week we talked about Big Louie's. Sad note that it got shut down. But yeah. I want to put out there to our active duty or veteran listeners – what is a place that's on par, like another place that's like that, on par with Big Louie's, that if you mention it, anybody who has ever been on that base knows where you're talking about? For instance, what's the Purple Church
outside Oceanside.
Right. So if you've been, Kate and I are familiar with the Marine ones. We want to hear from you if you're in the Army, if you're in the Navy, if you're in the Air Force. Give us a place that's outside of Fort Hood that's like that. Give us a place that's outside of Andrews Air Force Base that's like that, or Minot, South Dakota might even be more fun. If you have a place like that, we want to do deep dives and find out, do a little investigative journalism.
What makes it special?
What makes those places special? That's our task. Yeah, that's our task to you, the ZBT listeners. Thanks, everybody, for listening again. We'll be back on Tuesday with another episode.
Woohoo!
Sound the retreat.